Hello and welcome back to Matchroom Radio. My name is David Diamante. I will be your host today. And I'm with a great guest. We have Cyrus Pattinson. How you doing, brother?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having us on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored that you're here. And we're in Barcelona. We're coming live from Barcelona, Spain. Is this your first time down here?
First time in Barcelona. And it's a beautiful place, isn't it? Definitely become.
What have you done down here? It is. I love this city, but what have you done?
We've been to the Familiar, the cathedral. We've been down by the coast, by the port and stuff. I think we're going to head back there today, since we've got some beautiful sunshine. So.
Yeah. And now you're fighting tonight. This is actually fight day. This is rare that we do a podcast on fight day. Mm-hmm. How you feeling? What's going on? Now, let me just ask you before that, because don't you normally campaign at one? Well, you campaign at super welter, and fighting this fight at welterweight.
Yeah, 154 normally. And then we've just been making small changes, little increments to try and get down towards 147 for championship. So all the time we're thinking about the future and that long-term goal. So just seeing how the body feels. I know my debut only got a couple of rounds in, but I think we're going to have a few more rounds tonight. I think the opponent that we've got come with the fight, and I think he's tough, he's durable. So I'm expecting a good fight.
Yeah, you get the guy from Romania today.
Yeah.
His win, he's only got one win also like you, but yeah. It's by knockout, just like yourself. So you want to stay at 147, is that, do you feel comfortable there?
Yeah, well, I've not competed at 66, 7 or 147 for a lot of years. I competed at 69, so about, I think it's 153 on JB Boxing. So I'm just making them small decreases, trying to get my weight down and just see how your body reacts, because you don't want to be in an 8-round fight and then gas after 4 rounds. So we'll just chip away, and maybe it's by the time that we're getting ready for a title, we'll be there.
Now, is that by going down a weight, do you do that just by diet? Is that certain different exercises? How do you typically do that?
I mean, it's all about a calorie deficit, isn't it? You've got to take in less than what your expenditure is. So just train hard. Training doesn't change. I train the same, but it's just gradually bringing it down over time. And it's a different ball game now as well, with a 24-hour weigh-in. I mean, you've got a little bit more time to refuel and rehydrate, whereas in the amateurs, you might weigh in at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning, and then you're fighting at 1. So that gives you a bit more of a wider berth as well.
Well, so if you're weighing in at 147, where do you think you'll be on fight night when you step into the ring? Where do you expect your weight to be?
For my last fight, I think I weighed in at 143, 152 and a half. And I think I put on about 5 pounds. So I don't want to be too heavy, because I've learned in the past I can make you lethargic, make you quite heavy, sluggish. So I think being about 72, I think that's about 157 maybe, 158. I think that's maybe...
For the fans that are not familiar with you yet, and there might be a lot of them that are not familiar with you yet, you had a very storied amateur career, and we'll talk about that in a little bit with Team GB, but tell the fans out there, what's your fight style?
To be honest, with JB, you learn to adjust and adapt, but I do love to have a fight. I love to have a row as well. So sometimes that can get the better of us. I need to put the ego aside, that I think I've matured and I've learned through experience that you can either win and make it a hard night's work, or you can win and make it an easy night's work. So you've got to use your brain.
That's for sure. When did you first turn amateur? How old were you?
I think I started boxing when I was around 13. Boxing and football kind of coincided with each other, and I kind of, to believe it or not, I suffered more injuries in football than I did boxing. So I think that's what the time that I kind of put the football to the side and fully committed myself to boxing. And I think it was around 2015, after my successful stint in the ABAs, that I was invited for a trial for Team GB, and then that's when I progressed on the GB squad.
It's funny, I feel the same way. I suffered more injuries playing soccer than boxing.
It is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, but it can actually happen. It's funny though, because people wouldn't think that.
No, they wouldn't think that.
But yeah, I'm the absolute exactly the same. Well, very different.
Yeah.
I never fought on your level. But that's great. So, but I think that, like you said, the adjusting is a huge thing, because when you're in Team GB, when you're in so many years in amateur, you face so many different types of opponents. I really feel like that's one of the best things about having a longer amateur career, is you face so many styles.
Definitely.
You know, like this Romanian guy that you're fighting, do you know anything about him, his style?
We know that he's predominantly an orthodox. He likes to switch. He likes to have a row. We've seen him fight different ways, to be honest, but I think he likes to come on the front foot, so I don't think I'm going to be having to hunt him or cut the ring down. I think he's going to be there to hit.
He's going to be right there.
So it's going to be an exciting fight. I think so.
Now, you fight southpaw.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find a lot of guys trying to switch up these days to mirror your style and take away that southpaw advantage?
To be honest, not really, because I'm right-handed southpaw, so I boxed orthodox till about 2014. It was only my coach, Grim Rutherford, who switched his 1 year before the ABAs into a southpaw, and then that's when I feel like I gained most of my success.
So you're right-handed?
I'm right-handed, yeah, yeah.
So Graham's from Burtley Boxing Club.
Yeah.
It's your trainer, Graham Rutherford, up in Newcastle. He's the one that
switched
you.
Yeah.
Was that just really odd for you at first?
It was. I mean, certain times in fights and stuff, when everything was quite comfortable and that, you kind of switch off, and I used to switch stances and stuff, and then Grim used to kick off and say, like, oh, get back to the orthodox stance, and then I was putting people through ropes and that, and dipping off and slipping and countering, and then I think you kind of thought, actually, this is what you need to be. And then I went in the gym on a Monday after my fight, and he says, you're southpaw from this day forward, and trying to do the drills, the stepping drills and stuff, your legs were crossing over, and it was an awkward feeling at the start, but I feel like it came more naturally. So
I know you skateboard, you like to skateboard. Do you skate goofy foot or do you skate regular?
Regular.
You do?
I don't skateboard anymore, but because I lost my teeth when I was younger from skateboarding, when I tried to pop the board up and came back to... So I had to sort my mouth out, but skateboarding as well, like, it's a dangerous sport, isn't it? But it's a great feeling.
I love it. But more injuries than soccer or football and skateboarding than boxing.
Definitely. So
to the parents listening out
there.
Yeah,
definitely. It's the best sport to be in.
Do you feel, speaking of though, I mean, because, you know, obviously the scariest injury for me in boxing would be something in the head, which you can't really see.
Yeah,
do you ever feel cobwebs or, I mean, I assume you've sparred hundreds of rounds.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a scary thought when you think about it. But I feel like you try not to think about it or entertain that thought too much, because I think it would kind of divert you from what, or make you a little bit
more. The task at hand.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I think.
I mean, it's also reality. You got to look at it.
It is, definitely.
Dudes are teeing off on your head.
It is, isn't it? It is. I feel like that experience that I gained from maybe 2016 to 2021, like, I've learned to defend myself a lot more, where when I was like an inches from qualifying for the Rio Olympic Games, I feel like if I had turned professional then, my career wouldn't have been as, wouldn't have had that longevity or that success that I think I will have now. So.
Speaking of the Olympics really quick, because you just said the Olympics, a couple guys from your gym there, Pat won silver, yeah?
Yeah,
can you tell
definitely.
Us about the McCormick brothers?
Oh, fantastic fighters, absolutely great fighters. I mean, amongst the spars and stuff that we've had, just such talented, quality fighters. Really looking forward to seeing them both on the professional scene.
Do you think their style is going to mesh in the professional scene? Do you think they're going to make waves?
Definitely.
Why? What do you see about it?
Just the quality of them. I mean, just really naturally talented fighters. They can box, they can fight. They're so sharp, they're strong. It seems like they've got it all. I mean, when you watch them in the Olympics as well, Pat got the silver, and Luke fought the champion from Cuba, Andy Cruz. and lost to the winner. So I think that speaks for it in itself.
Now, you're obviously fighting out of Newcastle now. You're from Alnwick originally. Yeah?
Alnwick, yeah, Alnwick.
The accent. And you, tonight you're going to be wearing black and white trunks?
Black and white trunks,
yeah. Is it the colours of the tune? Is that why?
Of the tune, yeah. But I just like the clean cut of it. And I've kept the same shorts from my first fight, and I want to continue with the same colours, like just clean and crisp, isn't it?
Do you have a big sense of pride being from the north?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's where I've been born and bred, really. Northumberland, it's where I'm from, where my family's from, where all my friends are from. I've grown up there all my life. But I'm a small town boy with big city dreams now, so looking forward.
What are your dreams?
To be content and to be happy. I think that's the... Chris Lloyd asked us earlier on, I think a few days ago, like if I was like progressing for titles and stuff, and what titles do I see myself? I says the biggest title I think like everyone should be willing to defend the most is their inner peace and their happiness. I feel if you're content and you're happy, I don't think anything can top that. I mean, we do so many times in life, we try to chase to achieve things. And sometimes when you achieve them things, that they don't give you that happiness or that contentment, or they don't fulfill you for that long. It's always about the next thing after that. So I feel that's the most important thing.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but it's a little bit more nuanced of a conversation talking about happiness, right? Because it's not necessarily something that, you get and then you just keep it. Happiness is like a constant state.
Definitely.
Right, that you're constantly trying to achieve it and things like that. So what does make you happy? What makes you feel content? Is it family? Is it spirituality? Is it achievements? Is it a sense of community? Is it health? What is it?
Yeah, I don't think it's one big thing. I think it's a million little things. I mean, Tony Robbins said it like in a nutshell. It's like people put happiness down to success, but success only fulfills you for so long. He puts it down to progression. So it's always about progression.
Mm.
So if you're always moving forward and you're always in that direction, then that brings you that happiness and that contentment.
Do you listen to a lot of people like Tony Robbins?
Yeah, I have done in the past. Like he's, I think there's always stuff to learn and to take in from those great minds. So definitely.
Yeah, 100%. But now as far as success in the boxing game, I'm going to go back to the question. Is there something that you hope to achieve in the sport, not necessarily being a world champion or not necessarily this, but let's say fighting in a certain venue, or you want to go undefeated for a certain amount of time, or you want to have X amount of knockouts, or you want to fight this guy, or is there anything that you've thought about and that you kind of dream about? Like maybe, I mean, look, you turned over in Newcastle on a huge undercard with Lewis Ritson. That must have been a great feeling.
Yeah, that was a great feeling. Like it was always took that great sense of pride and stuff representing my area, and like I represent my country, and now I represent myself and my family, and so it was always a great feeling to be in my hometown. But I don't want to put myself in a small pigeonhole myself anymore. I mean, because when I was first amateur, my only goal was to be Northeast champion, Tyne Teasing Weir champion, and I surpassed that by a million miles. And almost when you surpass them goals, it's like it's unforbidden territory, because you don't really know. Once you've achieved it and you've passed it, it's like, well, what's next? So
it's all gravy, baby.
It is. So like I've surpassed everything that I ever expected myself to achieve. So I'm just enjoying every little bit of it, and I'm just gonna go as far as I can and enjoy the moment.
So 147, looking at that landscape, there's a lot of fighters out there. Obviously, you just had your first pro fight, so we're not getting ahead of ourselves here. But who are some of the welterweights that you... I mean, to me, that's one of the glamour divisions of the sport, without a doubt.
Oh, fantastic.
Fantastic division. Mm-hmm. Historically, who are some of the fighters that you looked up to coming up and that you love, especially at 147?
Domestically, I've done a lot of work with sport and friends with Conor Benlich, and he's flying the flag for the welterweight division now, and he's doing great things. Like his last few performances, I know his fight with Granados didn't turn out to be what everyone expected, but I think that was on the other half of Granados. But his previous performances and stuff, he's been looking really good. So I think he's definitely flying flag domestically.
Speaking of that Granados fight, were you surprised that Adrian fought the fight that he did?
I did, yeah, like, because in the hype and the build-up, it had the recipe and the ingredients for such an explosive fight, and I think that's a fight that Conor expected, and I think that was a fight that Conor wanted. Adrian came across that was the fight that he wanted and expected as well, but it makes it a difficult fight, especially for Conor to land those explosive shots when someone's going backwards. It takes the sting out. You can't get the purchase on your shots, and so I could see how it was frustrating for Conor, but at the end of the day, he got the job done and he moved on.
Yeah, it's a learning experience. I mean, I think, though, you know, they say styles make fights. Again, it's such a cliche, but it's said for a reason. Styles do make fights.
Definitely.
And Adrian seemed to have the style to make the right fight, but he tried to pull a surprise,
definitely.
And it turned out to be not the fight of the year, that's for sure. But at the same time, that's the type of opponent if Conor wants to move up the ladder, you know. I think this is one of those things. I mean, how did you feel? What I was going to say, I'm getting ahead of myself, is just, I think the pro ranks, you know, when you take off that headgear, when you fight with smaller gloves, when you have the bright lights and the big crowds, it's a different feeling. And like, you know, when you start getting these opponents, you know, when you first turn over, you know, you want to get your sea legs, so you might get a couple easy touches here and there. And the fans need to understand that. But once that happens, it's time to start learning, because the screws only tighten. Right?
Yeah.
They only go one way. They don't loosen. They just tighten.
Yeah.
So it's not going to help you as a pro fighter to have these easy touches.
Definitely not.
You know, and I feel like sometimes in the amateurs, like, you don't know who you're. You could be fighting the best guy. You could be fighting. So when you have those long amateur careers, and you'd had a very good amateur career, I feel like that can teach you a lot, although the game is kind of different.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, when you're out there, I feel like a lot of guys in the amateurs, they're touching. Where
yeah,
in
definitely.
The pros, people are sitting on punches.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you sitting on punches? Are you touching? Are you do different stuff depending on what it is?
That's what it's about. It's all about being able to mix it up, because you can't be sitting on your punches for every shot.
Of course. Conor was kind of doing that at the beginning too. Every shot, he was looking to go out of the park with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of his opponents have been there to try and mix up with them, and so they've been there for a land his shots and to be sitting on his shots and get the purchase and stuff. So when you've got an opponent that's a bit more lighter footed and moving backwards, it changes the game. Like, you've got to be able to feint and get your feet in, cut them off correctly, and then start whipping them in once they kind of settle. So I think Conor adjusted to that well. I think early on it was because he had kind of expected Adrian to sit there with him in the pocket and have a slug out, but he didn't. So it's being able to mix it up. Sometimes you need to be light on your feet and sharp to move, agile. And then once you think you've got your man hurt or you see his feet go flat, then you can start whipping the shots in, and then you go back on your toes and move around. So I think Manny Pacquiao does it really well. He's a great fighter, welterweight. I mean,
what did you think of the Ugas fight?
To be honest, whenever I've watched Ugas, he always seems like he just does enough, and I think that's why so many times you see him in such close fights. But I think he's had a few opportunities that maybe hasn't when he's weighing stuff, and I think so. He was definitely up for that fight with Manny, and he delivered, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. It's strange to me. I thought the fight was a lot closer than people thought. I'm fine with Ugas getting the nod. You know, I think he won the fight. But at the same time, Ugas was just the bigger guy, the younger guy, the stronger guy. Why not step on the gas? Why not bully the smaller, older Pacquiao? Why not do that? I feel like he could have, and I think he could have put an exclamation point on that victory.
Yeah.
At the same time, for Pacquiao, for me, I think it was, we talk about styles making fights, I think he was ready for the Spence fight. I think it would have been a very different fight with Spence.
Yeah.
And obviously with Ugas' partner falling out, with Spence and his injury, him falling out, they made that fight. I just think maybe it wasn't the right style for Pacquiao at that time.
I mean, at that level, like, to change opponents on such close notice and stuff, it's a big thing. Like, I mean, my opponents changed a few days before, but we're not fighting for, we're not elite world-class world championship fighters at the moment. So I think when you move up those rankings, like those, there's such small margins, aren't there, that can be such a wide...
Man, you're speaking truth, brother. It is. Those margins are so small, they make such a difference. Yeah. And for the people out there that maybe are new to the sport or kind of learning about it, the levels, there's different levels, right? Even in amateurs,
definitely.
There's just so many levels. And when you get to that elite world level, it's a really massive leap. I mean, we see it all the time with British, European, and then world level. You know, guys that do really well in the domestic scene, and then they might go to European, they might bite off a little bit more than they can chew.
Yeah.
Or from that European scene up to world level. It's just there's a different level. It's important to have those bridge fights, and that's kind of what we're talking about with these opponents that are tricky. You know, sometimes you have a guy that's got a granite chin, you can't stop him. So you know, like, look, I have to go the distance, or I'm going to have to get on my bike a little bit and just box him.
Yeah.
Then you got guys that they just want to run away from you. You have to cut off the ring. You know, all these different type of opponents.
Definitely. It's all about setting up what's going to be the most beneficial fights, isn't it? That's going to be able to take you to that next level. So obviously I've just entered into this professional game, so my next level is going to be English or British. So it's about the styles and stuff that's going to be an addition to me, to my development, to me learning. That's going to be able to... I don't want people that's going to... I'm just going to go in and knock over and stop, because I'm not really going to learn anything from that. So
right.
If I do find a durable fighter, then it's going to be a harder night's work. So like, it's all about these styles, that we have different styles. I mean, for my first fight, we had an orthodox kid that was switching stances, he was thrown, game kid. This fight, we've got seem more of a mature man. Maybe his next fight will have a runner. So you need to, but it's all these things that I've dealt with as an amateur, but like you say, in the professional game, it'll be nice to just refresh and review these again.
How did it feel the night when you came out, you know, I'm calling your name and you came out, like, what was it like? Like, what's going through your mind? Are you a sentimental guy? Like, oh man, remember this, Cyrus? Or were you just like, look, get this done?
Yeah.
Or were you just super excited? What was going through your mind? But in the walkout, or first of all, the dressing room, then the walkout, then you're in the ring, then afterwards, tell us about it.
Nah, I am sentimental, and like, I do like enjoy looking for signs. I'm spiritual and stuff. Like, I sent my brother some photos earlier on, and he had mentioned straight away back, he replied, and he was like, them photos came through on 11-11. So it was like, oh, things are aligning for you and stuff. And I was calm all week, and for my debut, I was just soaking it all in, calm, chilled out, and I knew that I had a job to do. But as soon as I was in that tunnel and I heard, I only expected the people that I knew to be cheering for us. So when my music kicked in and obviously announced my name and stuff, and the whole place got behind us, it was just like such an overwhelming feeling, because I never really expected that. I didn't think I was going to go out there and I'm going to get everyone behind us, because I'm not like that. I didn't expect that. So when everyone did, it was just like, I was kind of blown away from it. So it was a really nice feeling, especially to get the win.
There's something special about the North. Like, they really rally behind their own fighters. And you got April Hunter up there, right? She's turned pro and she's doing her thing. Yeah, it's got to be a great feeling. And also, you know, obviously, look, you fight out of the same gym as Lewis Ritson. Yeah, the same.
No, he's not at Burley. He's been to Burley kind of a few times to spawn stuff, but he's with Forest Hall, so it's not.
Oh, right. He's Forest Hall. I stand corrected. Absolutely, you're right about that. Yeah, he's Forest Hall. But you guys know each other quite well.
Yeah, very well. Yeah, yeah. I've,
and his dad.
Yeah, great bloke, Davey. Spent a lot of rounds, done a lot of training with Lewis, like, great character. I mean, he was the one that kind of opened up the scene again for the Northeast fighters, and he's been flying the flag, so.
I mean, it seems to be a lot of stuff going on up in the North, and I guess you hope to be part of that, yeah?
No, I'd love to be.
You know, speaking of the North, because there's such a marked difference for people that don't know the UK between the North and the South, and people in the North, they slam people from the South, and people from the South slam people from the North. But I love all the UK. I've been, I have a great time. Very different, but like, so many great areas, you know.
Yeah.
And I said great, not gray. So many great areas in the UK. But it is different. But tell us about growing up there, because you say you're a small town boy, but you had your fair bit of scrapes and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's just kind of the same stuff that everyone really gets up to when they're kids. Well, I feel like, because I just kind of seen that as normality. So it was just getting chased by the police, playing out with your friends, building tree houses, having sleepovers on the beach, just all that kind of stuff that I just feel like everyone kind of done as kids.
Let's go back to the chase by the police bit, because I think that might not be everyone's story.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that's how I found boxing, to be honest. There was a few things that went on when I was young in my childhood and stuff, and I just feel like it kind of led us down the wrong way. I felt maybe that I wasn't on the right path. I was getting into trouble at schools, getting in trouble.
Was it your friends that were, or was it just you, or were you angry?
Yeah, just I think
you were just trying to find your way.
Yeah, I think it was a bit more unfortunate events and stuff within my family and stuff.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Nah, not at the moment. Maybe in the future I'll elaborate a little bit more.
But do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got one brother. Yeah.
Older, younger?
Older. He's out here with my dad, actually, 2 years older.
He's here.
Chavez Louis.
Okay. And did he fight too?
Yeah, he boxed for a while. I think he had about 12 fights. He was half and half, but he's a very talented artist. Him and my dad have a tattoo business. So in Berwick, which is a little bit more north.
You said a tile business?
A tattoo.
Oh, a tattoo business.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, no, yeah.
Okay, so he's an artist. Mm-hmm. And your dad too.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. Do you have any tattoos?
Nah, I've had the bare needle, no ink, just to see how it felt like, but not yet.
Okay, are you going to get a tattoo?
Maybe in the future. I feel like if you're going to get a tattoo, you need to get something that actually means something to you.
Sure.
You don't want just a picture that, it's like a t-shirt for life, isn't it? So you need to make sure it's a t-shirt that you want to wear for the rest of your life.
That's for sure. Interesting. So tell us about hooking up with Matchroom. I know before you actually signed with Matchroom, didn't you make your own kind of promo like Cyrus?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it was back in 2019 or 18. I had went through a series of injuries and stuff and a few bad spells on JB. And I was like probably one of the lowest points in my career wise. And just for my own motivation and whatever, like I had made a promo picture with Welcome to the Team, with my face on and Matchroom, and I've still got it on my phone somewhere. And I used to that was like my kind of fuel and my direction. And I think I had put a tweet out as well that I had, once I got on the JB squad, Eddie shared it a little while ago, just saying that now that I've secured a place on Team JB, it's time to win many amateur titles and then progress to sign with Matchroom. And it was kind of bit of law of attraction, really, and then it all came to fruition, like, so.
So you're made up to be here.
I'm made up. It is. I'm meant to be here.
It's great stuff. I do want to just go back just a second. These things that happened in your family, how did it make you feel? I think that's what's more important, because we all have stories, and everyone out there probably has some stuff that's gone on in their family, but was it stuff that made you sad? Was it stuff that made you lonely? Was it stuff that made you angry? What was the feeling inside of you? I don't know what it was that happened, but how did you feel and how did that affect you as a youth? Like, how old were you?
Pretty young. So from, it went on over a long period of time, really. Probably still to this day, but you're an adult, so.
You can deal with things a little bit
different. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes you feel frustrated. You feel angry. You feel sad. You feel like everyone's against you, that no one's in this team, no one's there for you. So it's like, so you get a mixture of feelings and then obviously that, for a young person, that is, it affects how you deal and how you think and how you pick your actions. And
how did you deal with that?
You just do what you do, isn't it? And you just gotta plow on and persevere.
That's not an answer. You do what you do. I mean, what did you do? Just, like, were you, did you, like, how did you find an escape? Did you do drugs? Did you drink? Were you smoking cigarettes? Were you listening to music? Were you skateboarding? Were you fighting? What was your outlet? What was your escape?
I think it was fighting and just, I think it was fighting really. I think that, well, I was into music. I played the guitar since I was probably 6 or 7. So I was really musically orientated. In sport, football, then got into boxing. But before boxing, I was fighting in the streets, fighting at school, just fighting really. And then that's why I took the interest into boxing. And I was more successful at that than I had been at anything else. So I think that was kind of my escape, which I committed and threw myself in completely. It's a solo sport, so I knew that I didn't have anyone else to rely on, as in football. I've not got another Templiers. It's all about me.
Yeah.
What I put in, I get out. And
of course.
That's what I committed. And then I feel like my life changed after that.
So you've always enjoyed fighting?
Yeah, definitely.
Were you always good at fighting?
Yeah, I was.
You ever gotten your ass kicked?
A few times.
In the streets or in the ring? Both?
Both, really. Yeah. Nah, not so much in the streets. Never in the streets, but...
You never lost a street fight?
Nah, never lost a street fight.
How many street fights do you say you had?
I'm not too sure.
A lot.
Maybe.
Did you get a reputation in your area?
Yeah, I did. I was never a bully though. I never started any of the trouble.
Yeah, you just finish it.
Yeah. It was always people that came to me. So
Did you ever become good friends with guys you fought in the street afterwards or no?
Few people. Like, I don't hold any grudges or animosity towards anyone. I mean, once it's over, it's over. Like, and I mean, if that's the way it is, like, a lot of people just don't try to continue it afterwards. So I don't hold grudges or anything after that. So once it's done, it's done.
What kind of music are you into? What were you into back then? What were you listening to?
Well, I grew up around, like, with my dad and that, listening, he was into like Metallica and bands like that. And then I had with my mom as well, she was into Texas and Gabrielle and The Corrs. So I grew around like a wide variety of music, and I listen to all sorts of, I like, when me and Charlie are driving around, sometimes we'll have country on, sometimes we'll have dance or garage or, so I just listen to anything that I like, really. So I mean, I'd listen to anything, like some bits of classical music, Claire de Lune, whatever I like.
You still play guitar?
Yeah, I still play guitar, yeah.
So I used to play drums, and I know the guys in Metallica pretty well. And Kirk, the guitarist,
he's
a very good friend of mine, and he asked me to give him drum lessons.
Did he?
I used to play drums with Kirk and recorded with him, and yeah, good guys. Those first three albums.
Yeah, great albums. I mean,
unbelievable.
I grew up a little bit later, so it was more on like the Black Album and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's when I started. The first three, Metallica. Metallica is my
Ride
stuff.
The Lightning and...
Ride the Lightning, Kill 'Em All, Master of Puppets. Yeah, unbelievable
definitely.
Albums.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like not a bad song on any of the albums.
No. That's what I listen to now sometimes.
Cliff Burton.
Yeah.
You know, rest
Cliff
in peace.
Burton. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, my buddy Ron came up with the name Metallica.
Did he?
He named him, yeah.
Did he?
He named him. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I read the story about, I think it was Kurt that was, I think it was on the phone one night, and this is how nothing else matters, when he was just strumming away on the phone, I'm sure it was Kurt. And obviously the open strings, wasn't it? I think that's where it spiraled from.
Yeah, beautiful song. Very talented guys.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, one of the biggest bands in the world. It's amazing. They've been together a long time now. Some of these bands like Aerosmith and U2 and Metallica.
Yeah.
Stones, rest in peace, Charlie Watts, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's great that you have that outlet in music. I find it very important. You know.
Oh, thank you.
So, listen, it's great to talk to you. I feel like we could continue this, but I know you do have to fight tonight. I have a fight to call tonight. So I will be seeing you later anyway.
But before we go,
is it okay to answer a couple of questions from the fans?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, great. Let's see what we have here. All right. J. Wright asks Cyrus, presumably you know the McCormack brothers pretty well. Just how good are they, and what can they achieve in the program? We already kind of touched on that.
Serious fighters. I think they've both really reached the pinnacle of the amateurs. I mean, Commonwealth medals, European medals, world medals, Olympic medals. So I can say nothing but world champions.
You had a lot of accolades too in the amateurs. What was some of the, for you, like what was kind of the pinnacle moment? Doesn't have to be the highest accolade, but for you, what just felt like, wow, this is really, this is amazing.
To be honest, it was probably my first title when I was just about to secure my spot on the JB. Got the ABA final and then went into the Tri-Nations and I won the Tri-Nation gold medal and took it in the hospital for my mom. So that was one of my fondest memories.
Mm, amazing. Great feeling. Okay, Lauren Wilson asks Cyrus, you boxed two other matchroom boxers in the amateurs, Scott Fitzgerald and Suleiman Sissoko. What can you recollect from those bouts?
Both great fighters. Fitzgerald, I knew a lot about Fitzgerald before the Fitzgerald fight. I supported him and I watched him smash the Commonwealths and win the Commonwealths. I seen him getting interviewed on, I think it was GMAV. And so going into that fight, I knew it was going to be a tough fight and I knew the standard and quality of fighter Scott was. So I knew I had to show up and I always say that a nervous fighter is a good fighter. And on that day, like, I just remember going back after the first round and my coach, Graham Rutherford, saying, now you know what it's like to be in with a Commonwealth champion and you can actually go and beat him. So that when I got off my stool, I knew that the fight was there to be won. And I put in one of my defining performances and people still watch it back now and messages when they're saying, I boxed great that day. And Scott's done great things as a professional and I wish him all the health and I know that he's had a few issues himself, but I wish him 100% his recovery and I would love to see him back. He's a great fighter.
Yeah, I really like watching him fight and that fight with Fowler was just unreal. And Fowler's got a big one coming up with Liam Smith.
Great fight.
It's a great fight. I really can't wait. Will you be up there?
I might take a look actually. Yeah. Be a great fight.
And also the AJ Usyk coming up in London, which is a really interesting fight. And
it is.
Really could be a banana peel for AJ.
It could do. It could. But I've got full faith in Anthony that he'll get the business done. And hopefully we can get this unification fight with Fury if everything comes together.
Yeah. I'm going to wrap this up really quick, but I do have a quick question just because, you know, you talk about how in football you've got these other guys you got to worry about. But in boxing, yes, it's you in the ring, 100%. But there is somewhat of a team. I mean, obviously, Matchroom's part of it. Graham Rutherford, you've mentioned. But there's another guy who's off camera right here. I do want to mention Charlie Sims. Can you tell us about his management and why you hooked up with Charlie? And obviously, his pops, Tony, is an incredible trainer. Tell us a little bit about that relationship, how you guys met and what goes on with that.
Great family. Both great men. I first met Charlie, I think it was in about 2015, 2016. Him and his dad, Tony, we're bringing up fighters on a regular basis. We had like a spot with Ricky Burns, bringing Conor Benn up. I think there was quite a few fighters that they were bringing up for sparring and stuff. And that's where I met Charlie and we just kind of connected and just had a great friendship and stuff. And we're going on for food with Tony and stuff after sparring. And then that's kind of where, I don't know if Charlie was, is like from management wise if it was what he is now and stuff. So I mean we just had a great friendship and that and it just kind of went from there.
Great stuff. Listen, I'm gonna let you go, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and we wish you the very best of luck tonight. I'm gonna see you in the ring in a few hours and God bless.
Thank you very much.
And take
David.
Care
thank you.
All right,
thank you.
Until next time guys, tune in.
Thanks,
on the
man.
Zone.
Thank you very much.